Can you all hear me? Yes? Awesome. Great. Thank you all for coming in. We'll get started. If the folks behind can hear me, the timer is not working. Okay. Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and get started. If you're in here for the Azure IaaS session, everybody in here for the Azure IaaS session? Okay, that's good to see. Because we had a couple of folks come and ask, hey, where is the SHA-1, SHA-2 session, and where is the PowerShell session? They're happening in adjacent rooms. That's also called the Thomas Murphy Ballroom, right? So that's why there's a bit of confusion. So my name is Venkat Ghatamneni. I'll kick us off today, and then I'll hand it over to Vidya and Drew, my colleagues, who will be speaking through a good chunk of this session. I see a bunch of folks leaving. I'm assuming that's for SHA-1, SHA-2 and not my voice. Yeah, so what this, so Drew is Principal Program Manager in the compute team. He oversees all of the compute sort of virtual machines on the platform. And Vidya is on my team, and she looks after IaaS sort of from a product marketing angle. And what we intend to do, frankly, in this session is give you guys a little bit of an Azure IaaS 101, right? This is, in a lot of ways, a foundational session. And hopefully we'll cover enough ground here, honestly, for you guys to then go and have deeper, go into deeper sessions and learn a lot more about individual services. So that's the intent of this session. So it is foundational. It is, in a lot of ways, I would have loved to have a title like Azure IaaS for Dummies, but I didn't want to disrespect anybody, so we came up with this title, right? So here's a brief list of sessions if you're interested to learn more about any of the individual sessions. It's a subset of all, the sessions, but gives you a little bit of a flavor of where you can go and learn even a lot more than what we will cover in the session. I see some cameras coming out. So yeah, take a look, and I'll leave the slide at the end, you know, just here for you guys to just look at this and then determine what sessions you want to attend. So let me kind of go ahead and get started, and by asking you a question. How many of you have used Azure or have played around with Azure? Okay, a few hands, a few more. Okay, probably about, like, I would say 30% of this room or so, probably, right? For the rest of you folks, so for the folks, of course, awesome, continue that. But for the rest of you, this is, in a lot of ways, this slide is a grounding slide, right? In terms of understanding about what IaaS is, what PaaS is, and what SaaS is. You might have seen a different version of it before. But fundamentally, if you are running on-premise data centers today, the extreme left is what you end up doing, right? You manage basically all the way from networking to applications. And as you get to the right, you know, there's less and less involvement from a management point of view. IaaS is basically one step to the right where you are still responsible for everything from operating system layer up top to applications. So that means obviously you will still be responsible for choice of operating system, patching that operating system, maintaining it, and so on and so forth. Below that, of course, the virtualization stack, and below that, we basically offer it to you, right? So that's what IaaS is. PaaS is one more layer to the right where you're responsible for your application and data, and everything else below that is automatically done for you, right? So you don't have to worry about it. And of course, on the extreme right is SaaS, software as a service, where you're frankly not responsible for a lot of things except for using the service, right? So examples on the extreme right-hand side, things like Office 365, right, from Microsoft. And of course, IaaS and PaaS are what also the industry calls cloud platforms, which are used for running generic applications. And essentially, I mean, the point here is that there are two modalities of using the cloud, IaaS and PaaS. And when we talk about Azure, and you guys have seen Azure and, of course, Scott's keynote, and you might have, of course, if you attended Jason's session, general session yesterday, he talked a lot about Azure. Azure is an IaaS and a PaaS platform. In other words, Azure is a platform that enables you to use the cloud in both modalities, right? So that's what Azure is. And here's a sort of a list of, like, this is a bit of an eye chart. It's meant to be an eye chart, where this kind of like gives you a comprehensive view of all the different services in Azure, right? And you will see nowhere does it say infrastructure as a service, right? So the way to think about the platform is, hey, there is a bunch of data center infrastructure that we have around the world, and there are many services up top that that allow you to use those sort of infrastructure that's underneath. And beyond that, frankly, it's your decision whether you want to use Azure as an IaaS platform or a PaaS platform. And there are many services here, of course, that let you do IaaS, and these are some of the core services, right, that lets you do IaaS. And we'll talk a little bit about these services as we go through the session and sort of demo to you guys also how to use some of these services. So hopefully that helps clarify a distinction between the different models and what we're here to talk about. You guys must have seen this a million times by now in Scott's keynote, Jason's session, and so on. Azure fundamentally stands for being global, trusted, and hybrid. I'll spend some time talking about, very briefly, about each of these things and, frankly, what it means to you folks here in the room, right? Global infrastructure, we have 34 regions around the world. And by the way, each of these big bubbles that you see, a region is what we call, and this is how you get exposed to in the Azure Management Portal, right? You can choose where you deploy your applications, where you run your infrastructure, among all of these regions. That's what a region literally means. And later on, Drew will show you in the management portal how to actually make selections of where you want to run your environments. A region is not a data center. It is a collection of data centers, right? So that's a question I get often. Hey, is it just one data center? No, it's not, right? It's a bunch of data centers in a particular location that are built basically for availability and resiliency, right? So that's what a region is. And of course, you know, we do have one of actually the biggest global footprint in the public cloud space today with 34 regions, twice as big as our nearest sort of competitor. Now, like I said before, each region is a bunch of data centers. And this, I think, at a high level explains how we manage data availability and replication in each of those regions. So essentially, in this example, US East region is paired with US West, and every Azure region is basically paired with some other Azure region, right? And this is basically a concept in our data center design. If you were to sort of like, you know, make a copy of your data in one of the regions, as let's say in the US West on the left-hand side, automatically we maintain three replicas of that data in that region, right? Across different data centers, perhaps. That is for high availability. Simultaneously, what we also have the option is for that data to be replicated asynchronously in a paired region that is hundreds of miles away. So what that does is it gives you additional sort of protection against regional disasters. If an entire region, all the data centers in that region were to go down, maybe a big earthquake hits, your data is actually still there. Of course, it's not going to be perfectly synchronously replicated, but it gives you still access to the data. We call that geo-replication, by the way, right? And this is an option in the platform. And geo-replicated storage is what we call it, right? GRS storage. And of course, if you disable that, then you get just local three copies, right? So it's optional and you can choose whether you want to use it for your DR planning and whatnot, right? Now, across all of these regions, there are eight countries. Actually, both the paired regions are within the country. So if you're from one of those countries like US or Germany or China or Korea, India, Australia, in these countries, both the regions are within national boundaries. So that means if you are bound by some sort of compliance in those regions, rest assured that your data, even if you enable GRS, does not leave the country, right? So that's a key sort of like a point there. Now, talking about data centers, we talked about regions and data centers, but frankly, our global infrastructure is much more than that, right? We have a lot of fiber and connectivity going on between these regions, 1.6 million miles of fiber. We run actually one of the biggest networks on the planet as Microsoft. And beyond the network, we have edge locations, CDN locations, that also makes up our global infrastructure. So if you're running applications that require fast performance at the edge, there's CDN built into the platform for you to use. We also have edge locations where some of our, frankly, Azure services are running. The DNS service actually runs on the edge, so you get extremely fast sort of latencies when you make DNS queries, right? It doesn't go to the main sort of region. It goes to one of the edge locations for faster query resolution. So that's basically the power of, you know, Azure, of the global infrastructure that we have. And of course, because we have one of the biggest networks that's paired with some 3,500 ISPs out there, and some 90 plus POPs out there, we do have one of the best ways for you to connect to Azure via public internet, right? Low latency and high bandwidth. But if, let's say, you do not want to, however, connect to Azure using public internet, you want a private line into Azure, we do have that option as well, right? We call that Express Route. We have upwards of 25 locations around the world where Express Route is available. These are the locations. But beyond that, frankly, if you have any of these telcos or network service providers you're working with who are providing you MPLS networks, for example. We are working with these partners so that you can automatically connect to Azure on your private network from those network service providers, right? And if you were to use ExpressRoute, you get extremely high bandwidths and low latencies. We're talking like up to 10 Gbps sort of connections to Azure. And Azure then starts to appear like it's on your own private network. And a lot of customers use this for compliance reasons, high throughput, and so on and so forth, right? So a great service for you to familiarize yourself with if you want to go that route and, you know, think of Azure in a significant way, adding on to your existing infrastructure. Now, a little bit about, like we talked about global infrastructure, a little bit about trust and sort of our philosophy and the way we look at trust. Trust is, frankly, for Azure, it's a combination of two things. We do a lot of things ourselves to secure the underlying infrastructure in the platform, and then we give you a lot of tools on top of that so you can secure your own applications and your own virtual machines if you're using virtual machines in an IaaS manner on the platform as well. And if we were to look at the next slide, you'll see one way in which, you know, you can think about how we do the different sort of trust boundaries on the platform, right? At a physical level, there's a lot of things we put in place, including cameras, you know, the security staff and all of that. If any of you visited one of our data centers, you'll see a lot of this in play. Beyond that, at an infrastructure level, you know, there are a lot of security that's built into the platform, things like DDoS protection. In fact, I think we protect Azure platform against some 100,000 DDoS attacks in any given year. So that's automatically, you get the power of that if you're using Azure. We have the largest compliance portfolio of any of the big hyperscale public cloud providers out there. I think today the number is 47 different certifications. So if compliance is a big thing for you, do look into that. All of that is automatically done for you. And then beyond that, at a network level, there are a bunch of tools you actually get, and we'll talk about some of them later and show you some of them. If you wanted isolated networks in the platform, you get that via a service called Virtual Network. Inside that, you can define your ACLs, subnets, and what have you. You can do forced tunneling if that's how you want to connect back to on-premises. There is anti-malware protection you can enable in your VMs. There's a Key Vault, which is a service essentially for managing your secrets very securely. It's, if you're using HSM today for that, HSM as a service is basically what Key Vault does for you. And frankly, there are many more. This is just a short list of various things that we provide you so you can secure your sort of environments in Azure. I wanted to just sort of make a plug for one service, which is Azure Security Center. It is actually a phenomenal service, and if you haven't yet, you know, delved into this, I would highly encourage you guys to look at this. This is this one service that gives you a nice single sort of like a console for your all of your security needs. It has all these features that are listed there. It lets you monitor and manage the sort of security posture of your environments. It is built with integration with a lot of partner solutions so that, you know, you can deploy those partner security solutions from Azure Security Center. It provides recommendations to you on what is, if there is something going wrong or if there is a threat that we detected based on our sort of deep learning and data insights. So all of those are get available to you via Azure Security Center. So a whole bunch of things, and there is a much deeper session on this if you're interested in this, right? So, but this gives you an example of the types of things that are available to you in the platform so you can manage security, because I know security is going to be key for you, especially if you're transitioning and starting to use IaaS and if you're using on-premises. Now, spend a little bit of like time on hybrid. You might have seen this before. When we look at hybrid as a company, as Microsoft, we think hybrid is much more than connectivity. Of course, connectivity is important. And we talked about ExpressRoute as a phenomenal way of reaching out to Azure, but that's not it. There are many different ways of starting with Azure, starting IaaS in Azure. One example here I would pick on is StorSimple. Awesome, amazing device, very simple to start, get started with. On-premises, if storage is something that you're looking at today to leverage public cloud for, look at that solution. You can put that on-premises, and it classifies your data into what is highly frequently accessed and what's not frequently accessed. The frequently accessed data, it actually keeps on-premises, and the not-so-frequently accessed silently, it actually does things like dedupe, compression, and so on, and pushes to Azure, leveraging the sort of the cheap storage and the resilient storage that we have in Azure, right? So there's several ways in which for you to get started, especially if you're coming from on-premises and are looking at sort of building a hybrid sort of a model for you to use both at the same time. A a little bit about, like, you know, of course, when we talk to customers, right? I mean, you guys, many of you guys are using, of course, a lot of Microsoft software, including, you know, at the bottom layer, Windows Server and so on and so forth, right, in terms of operating system. But many of you are probably using other software out there, right, including open software. And frankly, if you're in IT, a lot of the times the developers are the ones asking for all these new technologies. So rest assured that Azure as a platform is built with openness as a fundamental tenet. These give you some of the examples of partner solutions that are certified and work on Azure, right? One thing I want to call out here, especially for IT infrastructure folks in the room, is if you're using you know, Red Hat in conjunction with sort of Microsoft solutions, we've done some amazing work with Red Hat and in partnering with Red Hat. As an example, the first point there is we have actually partnered with Red Hat to provide you an awesome customer experience. We have Red Hat engineers, support engineers, co-located in Redmond with Microsoft folks so that when you, as a customer, run into some issues, we don't do a little, you know, a cold handoff between the two companies. We take care of with a sort of a warm handoff between both of us, right? So that's one example. The second example is if you're using pay-as-you-go on-demand images of Red Hat Linux in Azure, support is inbuilt, right? And it is you automatically get to access the Red Hat support portal from our Azure management portal. So that's the level at which we're looking at to make sure that you know, we do a great job, first-class job, when it comes to open source and supporting our partners in the open source community. So the benefit, frankly, for you guys is that if you're looking at the at a platform and getting started with, rest assured that you get first-class experience, not just for Microsoft application software, but also for third-party stuff. And then beyond that, we do have an Azure Marketplace. Azure Marketplace is a store where partners are listing their solutions. These are certified, pre-configured stuff that you can immediately start using, many of them on a pay-as-you-go basis, right? So that's the power of cloud, as you, as many of you know. A lot of the stuff, solutions on software, you don't have to purchase licenses for. You can just do pay-as-you-go and save money, and or if your developers just want for a period of time, get it going that way. So that's a little bit about, you know, the fundamental sort of tenets and the value it drives for you, especially when you're looking at on the IaaS side of the platform. So at this time, I want to transition and hand it off to Vidya, who'll talk about some of these, you know, fundamental core services, and then we'll spend a bunch of time sort of demoing. And frankly, many of the demos, the way we've done it here is these are easy to do. You can actually just go sign up and do those things yourself and get a flavor of the platform. With that, let me get it over to Vidya.
Thank you, Venkat. Everyone can hear me okay? Great. So Venkat did a great job of telling us what are all the services that we have on the platform, an overview of what are the core fundamental tenets of Azure that we have today. And what I'm looking to cover here, and some of you in the room raised your hand that you have already experience with being on Azure, so some of these concepts might be familiar to you. But for others, we kind of want to like share some of the fundamentals or core services that really make IaaS and which are key for Azure as such. So this is a slide you probably saw yesterday in Jason's keynote as well. Compute, storage, networking, right? These are the core pillars or core services that form infrastructure as a service. We'll talk a lot of detail in each one of these services, but at a high level, what I want to tell about compute is that anything that you have on-premise, a VM that's running on-premise, you can very easily do the same thing to run it on cloud, on Azure, right? What are the benefits you get there? It's pay as you go. It's an on-demand model. You can provision it easily, but you only pay per minute. You can pay only for what you use. So that's a big benefit, right? Even compared to other cloud providers, we have a per-minute billing, which is really a key for you in terms of cost savings. We also have multiple options for high availability, like availability sets, which we'll talk about in a little bit detail. Some of the other services, like on storage, Azure supports multiple different storage types based on where you are, what business needs and applications you have. We have like a plethora of options, and we'll cover some of them. On networking, the thing I want to say is all of the concepts that you're familiar with on your on-prem world, you kind of have those like ACLs and subnets and everything else on the cloud that you have today, but a lot more in terms of flexibility, scale. Venkat touched on a little bit on Express Route and the dedicated private network. So you can do a lot more with the cloud than what you can do on-prem, and we'll talk about them. And across all of these services, we have this management, right? We talked a little bit about Azure Security Center. There are other management services like Portal, the Azure Resource Manager, Active Directory, multi-factor authentication. Like in the earlier iChart slide, if you see, there are tons and tons of services that help you manage these resources and also scale better. So with that, we'll go into a little bit detail on each one of these core services. Okay, clicker's working. You must have seen this alphabet soup in Jason Zander's session yesterday, right? You might be wondering, which instance do I use when? How do they compare against each other? Why do I really care? What workloads can I run on these? And that's what I'm going to talk about a little bit in this slide here. So if you look at these sizes, right, we have different kinds of hardware. We have different processors. How do you really figure out, like, for my application, what's the processing power, what's the compute capacity? We have a concept called Azure Compute Unit, or ACU. So this kind of helps you normalize across these different hardware, different performance type, performance or processors, what is your actual CPU performance. And today, we standardized it or based it on A-Series, so it's A1, which is 100 ACU, and everything is benchmarked off of that. So if you look at our A-Series, it's one of the sizes for people who've been on Azure for a long time. It's one of the earliest generations on the platform that we have today. It's an entry-level size, so dev test workloads, any of those, you can very easily run on A-Series. It's one of the cheapest virtual machines, if you will, right? Like if you want to just get a cheap virtual machine and run it, A-Series is the size for you to go. It's based out of HDD. Next, moving on to the D-Series. So these are general purpose virtual machines, right? They have a good balance of memory and also a fast SSD. So for many common applications, web servers, build servers, you can very easily deploy D-Series. We have two generations of D-Series. One of DV2 is the latest generation and the faster generation as well. And if you look at how it compares in terms of ACU to the A-Series, it's twice as much power, but it's also better value in terms of pricing. The next series, F-Series, so this we launched about a couple of months ago. These are compute-optimized VMs. You want a lot of processing power, but you don't really care that much for the memory. These are for those applications, analytics, gaming being some of those, right? You see that the processing power is as much as you have on the D-Series, but it's priced better, so it's a better price per performance story if you want just more processing capability. G, on the other hand, it's a very different class of virtual machines. Large memory, large local disk sizes, like up to 0.5 terabytes of memory that we have on the largest size. So what these sizes are for any large databases, right? SQL servers, Hadoop, SAP HANA kind of applications. For all of these big, large database kind of applications, these workloads are very well suited. And they are very similar in terms of performance to the D-Series, if you will, but in a different price range because of this niche or specialized workloads that they run for. We'll talk a little bit about premium storage and IOPS later on, but all I want to say in this slide is that the D, F, and G sizes, they are optimized to run both for standard storage and premium storage. A is the only one that doesn't work with premium storage today. You probably saw announcements yesterday on some of the new series we are launching, right? We are adding to our compute portfolio. So the 8 series, which we call the high performance computing VMs, these are the fastest VMs we have today on Azure. They also have something called as the InfiniBand or the RDMA support. So this is a fast interconnect. So if you want really high network throughput, really low latency, this is best for those. So some of the workloads that's very good for this is like simulation, crash testing, fluid dynamics, all of these workloads, this is great. And if you see in terms of the ACU, this is thrice as much as an A-Series. So it's really, really fast. It's based on Intel's Haswell processor. Moving on to the next size. So the L size, we've announced it, and it's going to be available in the coming month, is a storage-optimized virtual machine, right? We talked about G-Series. So on similar lines, this has a large amount of local storage for you, so up to 6 terabytes. So these can help you for NoSQL databases, Cassandra, MongoDB, and such. We'll be sharing pricing and other details on this in the coming weeks shortly. Many of you saw the Esri demo yesterday? Okay, not many show of hands. So there, yes, Esri talked about the power of these N-series or the GPU sizes. So these sizes today are in preview. So what these sizes are, they are on NVIDIA's latest graphics chipset, right? It's the highest end chipset that we have. So these sizes are very, very good for compute-intensive, graphic-intensive kind of workloads. Anything related to like deep learning, predictive analytics, remote visualization, rendering, et cetera, you can use these N sizes. With that, I want to talk about the last of these sizes. So this is kind of a different category, if you will. So we announced the general availability of SAP HANA large instances yesterday. So we talked a little bit about the G-series, which is very well suited for these large enterprise kind of workloads. So G5, which has about 0.5 terabytes of RAM, it's very good or certified for the SAP HANA applications. But if you need more than 0.5 terabytes, large workloads, then we have purpose-built hardware, right, that's supported for SAP HANA. For OLTP, it's about 3 terabytes per node, and for OLAP, we have 32 terabytes. And we are proud to say we support the largest enterprise workloads, and we are looking to even increase the support further, and we love to hear more from you if you're interested in larger sizes than 32 terabytes here. So with recap, what I want to say is that you probably are familiar with A and D sizes from before, but we've doubled our compute offerings in 2016. We are continuing to add more and more sizes. And the key thing to note is we have different hardwares, different memory configurations. Based on what's best suited for your workload, your application needs, you can use the specific virtual machines. We talked a little bit about virtual machines and compute. Now I want to switch gears and talk about some of our storage offerings like I mentioned earlier. So Azure Storage as such, it has different kinds of storage types. You have the options listed here, right? Like blobs, tables, queues, different types of disks and files. So we have multiple different storage types. But why is Azure Storage something that you should consider, right? Whether you have small amounts of data or you have petabytes of data, you can scale up and down, and you can store all of this data on the cloud, on the Azure Storage, right? Venkat talked a little bit earlier about geo-redundancy, how you know, there's replication. So if you want like more data redundancy and such, and in case of any failover or any scenarios, you're able to then have access to this data and have business continuity over there. You also pay on the cloud, like similar to virtual machines, for only what you store. So that's a good model in terms of that. There's also high performance in these databases as well. It works very well with REST APIs, PowerShell, Node.js, anything you name it, the storage can be accessed through that. With that, I want to talk a little bit about the storages or services that work very closely with IaaS being the focus of this session today. So when we talk about blobs, right, this is for any unstructured storage, text files, documents, all of these things they can store on this. And we have two tiers. We recently introduced the cool tier. So if you have infrequent access to data, you can benefit by using the cool tier and actually get cost savings there. You can switch back and forth between hot and cool, so if your business needs change, you can definitely switch, but so you can get better costs if you want the different tier option. We talked a little bit about disks that connect with virtual machines. So we have two different types of disks on Azure today. We have the standard disks. So these are HDD-based. They are magnetic disk drives. So if you don't, if your applications don't really require it doesn't require low latency or it doesn't require high performance, you are more better off by using this in terms of cost efficiency, right? And we get up to 500 IOPS per disk, but that really depends on your application and how parallelized it is. If we then move to the premium disks, these are SSD-based. anywhere you need high IOPS, high throughput, high performance, low latency, if any of these terms really matter to you and your application, then you're really talking about premium storage, right? You can attach, we have three different sizes today, from 128 gigabytes to 1 terabyte, so you can pick which size of premium storage is really beneficial to you. And you can also stripe these disks together, so you can get up to 64 terabytes per VM, and also get up to 80,000 IOPS there. So that's a large number of IOPS that you can get for your application there. The last type of storage that I want to talk about here is files. So files, for many of you who have legacy applications, this is an SMB file share in the cloud. It's based on the industry standard SMB 3.0. So you can share files between different virtual machines using some of the Windows command line interfaces. It also allows you for read-write access when you're sharing across multiple virtual machines, which you cannot do otherwise with disks. If you see below, we have multiple different options. We talked a little bit about ExpressRoute, but we have something like Azure Import Export, Azure AZ Copy, and services like this, which allow you to move your on-prem data to the cloud. With that, I want to transition off to Drew. We talked a little bit about virtual machines and Azure storage, but getting your applications up and running and having them highly available is so core to you. So he'll talk about some ways to do that.
Thank you, Vidya. So hello, everybody. Vidya and Vinkas gave you a quick overview of kind of the services that make up IaaS, how you start your journey. And what I want to do from here is move into a little bit more of the technical details and some of the kind of core concepts you'll want to understand as you look to bring your application into Azure. So one of the key core concepts we have is what's called availability set. Now, Azure gives you great low cost, only paying for what you use. The machines in Azure have really high reliability. We see well above 99% reliability. But for those mission-critical applications, you still want to think about, how do I actually have multiple instances? How do I actually handle the large amount of traffic I may get? And we have this concept called an availability set. And what availability set is allows you to deploy a set of machines, two or more machines, into this set. And then the Azure platform will handle those specially to make sure they're spread out and so that you do not have any impact of a hardware failure or software failure or software update process in the way. This applies both to Windows and Linux. And the way that this ends up happening is when you deploy your machines, you specify, I want these in an availability set. Then within Azure, we've got, and this is actually one of our older machines, a rack in Azure. You've got the physical machines that run the virtual server, virtual guests. You also have in here, right there in the middle, is a power distribution unit. So there's one power distribution unit in the rack, and that equates to a single point of failure. If that power distribution unit were to fail, all of those machines in that rack would go down. And not shown on here, but there's also a top of rack networking switch, which also, if that switch were to fail, all of those machines were to fail. But we don't just have one rack in Azure. We have thousands of racks in Azure. And what we do when you specify the machines are in an availability set, we take those machines and we'll automatically deploy those out to separate racks within the platform. That allows you to be resilient to a hardware failure, like a node failure, or a PDU failure, or a Tor failure. It also then allows you to be resilient when we need to update the host operating system. So for example, when we move from Windows Server 2012 R2 as the hypervisor to Server 2016, we do have to reboot the machines. And so we do that across those machines on availability set in what we call an update domain, so we don't affect more than one update domain of machines in your availability set. It allows you to have high availability from both a hardware and a software failure. Now with that, I want to move in and let's do a quick demo. So we're going to look at just deploying a basic virtual machine in Azure. So what we have here, when you log in, when you go to the portal, you have the Azure portal where we surface a large number of the resources. And in fact, if you go into the more services, you can see just the large set of different services available within Azure. But starting off with infrastructure as a service, you really want to start out with virtual machines. Regular virtual machines are our classic virtual machines, and I'll touch a little bit on what the difference there is. Typically starting, you want to come here to your plus new to get started. You select in here compute, and we'll give you a set of featured instances that you could start with, or you can click the see all, and this will take you to the marketplace. Now in the marketplace, we have first party and third party offerings, Windows, Linux. In fact, we have over 300 different infrastructure service offerings in the marketplace. And so you see Red Hat, as Venkat had mentioned before, Ubuntu. You see applications like Dynamics, third party applications. And you can search in here and find things like SharePoint and multiple different applications. To start with, we'll just do a basic Windows Server. But even within the basic Windows Server, you've got multiple versions. Windows Server configured for Essentials, Windows Server Data Center Edition, Windows Server configured for HPC. The most popular that we see run here is Server 2012 R2. As we go into general availability for Server 2016, we expect to see that to start picking up. But for right now, 2012 R2 is the server. You will see in here the selection between what we call Resource Manager Virtual Machines or Classic. Now, if you're just starting within Azure, I recommend that you use the Resource Manager Virtual Machines. There's a large amount of functionality available there that's not available in the Classic. However, if you've been using Azure, you have platforms of service, web worker roles, you can use the Classic. The Classic is fully supported. And in fact, you can actually deploy Classic machines and connect them up into the virtual network with the Resource Manager through a new feature we call VNet Peering. But for right now, we'll just kick this off with Resource Manager VM. And this is going to take us to a wizard where we're able to walk through and just configure the basic sets of the machines. So here we've got just the name of the machine. So we'll just do this a demo for Ignite. You can select the machine type. This is for the persistent storage if you want it based on SSD or hard drive. Again, for typical usage, we recommend SSD-based storage. It's definitely more performant, a little bit higher reliability. But if it's just a dev test or something that's not going to be hit hard, you can use the hard drive-based storage. Set a username. This is the username for the default administrator. Enter a password. Then when we get down here, you're going to configure this thing called the resource group. Now, in Azure Resource Manager, all resources are deployed into this resource group. It allows you to collect your set of resources. You can apply security policies, and you can apply tags or permissions on that resource group. And so here, we're just going to create a new resource for the demo. And then we're going to select the location. Now, as Venkat mentioned, Azure, we have over 34 active locations available today. This is more than the number two, our two competitors following us combined across many, many different geographic regions. But here, the closest one for Atlanta would be either the East US or East US 2. And so we're just going to click the East US location. The next step here is the size of the virtual machine. Vidya had showed a bunch of the different sizes. Typically, the easiest thing is to pick one of the defaults or recommended sizes. The recommended sizes vary with each individual image. So here, we're just going to pick the DS V2 machine. This is a one-core machine, which is a great starting spot. Then there's a set of configuration that you can apply here. In most cases, you don't need to change this, and you can just take the default. The one here I will highlight, though, is the high availability. So that availability set that I mentioned, if you're going to configure that and use that, you select this and you create a named affinity group, availability group. So Ignite here. We're just going to click this. And this creates that new availability set that we can use. We get a summary at the end here, runs a quick validation. If you want, all of this is based on a thing we call ARM templates, and we'll touch on it a little bit today. I will touch on it a lot more. In fact, I have a session on Friday if we want to go into a lot more depth of the template, but you can download this template instead of deploying the VM, and that will save the configuration that you've set up, that you've requested here, so you have that to use later to have the details. But we're just going to click OK. This is going to spin up the VM. Now, while that's deploying, let me just show you what we end up with is a resource group. And here's one I deployed a little bit earlier.
You have a virtual machine. You have a network security group that prevents access to the machine from unauthorized IP addresses, your virtual network and storage account. And then when you actually get here, you can click on the machine. And at the end, this is just like a basic machine, any machine that you would deploy into hypervisor. You can click on the connect button. We'll give you an RDP download for this. And you can easily connect into this machine just as you would any other virtual machine. And so when you see this logged in, it's just a standard Windows Server 2012 R2 machine that you can connect into, configure, and do as you want. So we showed creating a virtual machine from a set of gallery images that we have in the platform. But what if you have an existing machine you've been running and you want to move it to Azure? So here we've got the set of Azure machines represented up here in the cloud. Now we're going to show this. The bottom section here represents your machines running on premises. Whether that's running on Hyper-V, VMware, or bare metal, you have a set of machines. If they're running on Hyper-V, that's by far the easiest scenario. You have your VHD files, and those can easily just be copied and moved up to Azure. Very simple to move those up, fire up those machines, whether it's a generalized image or specialized VM, and you can start that running. If you're running something else, if you're running Hyper, or you're running VMware, you're running bare metal, my suggestion is to use the Azure Site Recovery tool. Site Recovery allows you to run that for 30 days on any individual instance, and you can use that to migrate very, very easily bare metal, VMware, and other services, other machines up into Azure. So it's by far the easiest way to get your machines up there if you're not running Hyper-V. The other piece we want to touch on is Azure networking. So Azure networking, when we deployed the machines, we deployed the machine into a virtual network. This is kind of like your corporate network, your private network space where your machines can communicate seamlessly amongst themselves. It allows you to segment it so you can have different subnets and you can have IP-based ACLs within the subnets, just like you would typically used in an on-premise environment. Internet users can be configured to have access into this, into those machines, either through what we call a load balanced endpoint or a public endpoint on the machine. And then you place ACLs on that to allow the customers coming in on the internet to hit specific port ranges, specific protocols, whether it's UDP or TCP. And you can additionally do that such that you can limit it to specific IP addresses. So for example, you could limit just the customers coming from your on-premise location into Azure, and if they're not coming from the on-premise IP address, they wouldn't be allowed to connect in. The next piece that you can do with the virtual network is what we call the connectivity. Now you can do what we call a point-to-site connectivity, which is a VPN into that virtual network. But what we see a large amount of customers using is either a site-to-site connectivity, which is a IPsec tunnel over the internet, or as you're using more and more Azure or some of the other Microsoft Cloud products, ExpressRoute gives you a carrier-based solution using MPLS that you can connect from your location up into Azure. And this was the set of partners that Venkat had mentioned earlier. If those are one of your telco providers, you can use them to connect directly into Azure, and you have a very low latency, high bandwidth connectivity into Azure. The ExpressRoute or the site-to-site VPN also allows you to connect to other on-premise resources. Most common scenario we hear asked is, how do I join my virtual machines to Active Directory on-premises? With a site-to-site connectivity or an ExpressRoute connectivity, you can connect those machines back to on-premise domain controllers. You can use on-premise DNS servers. And if you want, you can even run domain controllers up in Azure, and they can sync with on-premise through those ExpressRoute connectivity. Now, as I mentioned, most of your VMs, the new VMs, you want to deploy through Azure Resource Manager. Azure Resource Manager allows you to not only deploy VMs and the storage accounts and the network that goes along with the VMs, but you can also put other resources like a SQL database or a web application into this resource group. You define the things that you want in that resource group through this template. You can set dependencies, and the platform will deploy those, respecting those dependencies as you define. The resource manager allows you to use role-based access control to set different roles. So for example, you could specify a contributor role or read-only role into those resources in the resource group, and that will apply into those resources. So the resource manager and the ARM templates make it very easy to configure a complex application in a few clicks. And in fact, a little bit later in the session, we'll get into some more details how you do that through the Azure Resource Manager. So I'd like to turn it back over to Vidya to take us through some of the solutions using IaaS that you're going to put that you can put together to really get started in your cloud journey.
So you might have questions around what are the most common applications people are building today? What are the workloads that I should get started with when I think about the cloud, right? And we want to uncover some of that here. And as Drew mentioned, we'll go into some demos on some of these workloads and how easy it is to deploy this on Azure. So if you look at what are the typical starting points, right, when you think about the cloud, and we'll go a little bit in detail into like IaaS. So based on what we have heard from customers, based on the Azure deployment data that we have, we see that these are some of the most common workloads that customers are doing when they think about the cloud, right? Web and mobile, dev and test, backup and DR, we've talked about it a lot. Big data analytics, line of business applications, IoT. So these are some of the most common scenarios that customers are thinking about, hey, do I now move my application to the cloud? And we think about IaaS, the top three that pop or that come is dev and test scenarios, backup, recovery, and archival, and line of a business applications. And we'll talk a little bit more detail in each one of these sessions, each one of these scenarios. But what I want to talk before that is go through a customer journey, right? In terms of like when a customer, when do they think about going to the cloud? And when they think, how do they consider Azure and what kind of scenarios do they then think about? So Cespri, so that's a kiwifruit logo over there. It's one of the largest marketers of kiwifruit. It's based out of New Zealand, so they supply kiwifruit to about 53 countries, I think, like more than 30% of the world's kiwifruit is supplied by this company. So back in 2011, right, many years ago, they were attacked by a plant virus. Soon after, a couple of other calamities, tsunami, earthquake, like all of them at similar times, that kind of got them to reevaluate their disaster recovery plan. They're like, our IT systems, if it goes down, how do we keep our business running? How do we grow our business, right? That's when they thought about, let's have a stronger disaster recovery solution by moving to the cloud. Datacom, they chose one of the IT solutions company based out of New Zealand. They evaluated different platforms, and they chose Azure for its different set of capabilities, for cost, for scale. We talked about the number of regions we are in. So for all of these various reasons, they thought Azure would be a good fit. And the first step they then started was doing a proof of concept or building a test environment, right? So they had SAP applications running on-prem. They were like, will we get the similar performance if we then move it to the cloud? And yes, they did get better performance than what they had on-prem. The next step for Zespri then was, the cursor's not working, yeah. The next step for Zespri then was they were moving 100 virtual machines into a dev and test environment. As I mentioned before, this is one of the most common starting points, right? So then they did a dev test scenario testing. They looked more deeper into performance numbers, and they were super satisfied. And after that, what they did was they moved their entire SAP environment on to Azure, and they plan to move their entire IT infrastructure to Azure soon as well. So one thing, like this is very similar to many customers' journey that we have seen on the platform, but what the key takeaway is, what started out because of a disaster recovery solution gave them a lot more in terms of business. Not only did they have a better backup story, but they also like got significant cost savings. Zespri, by doing this, they saved like $700,000 to $1 million. And they also were able to go into more regions because of faster time to market and being able to scale as well. So that those were some of the benefits they reaped by getting to the cloud. So with that, I'll talk about backup archive and disaster recovery as one of the core workloads or scenarios, right? Backup archival DR is top of mind mind for many businesses today, like many IT professionals think about that today. But the fact is that not all of these applications or data that you have on-prem are getting backed up, right? Only mission-critical applications are getting backed up, and even those, like only a percentage, a fraction of them, are getting backed up. Why is that? That's because it's so cost prohibitive. You have to build up a secondary site, you have to buy hardware, you have to manage them. There's tons of things that goes with backing up in a disaster recovery solution that customers today don't want to put the investment in. That's where backup recovery in the cloud comes into picture, right? You can add more and more applications and you can expand the portfolio of applications that you are backing up by going to the cloud. You only pay for what you store, as you saw earlier on the storage side. So we have multiple different solutions. Venkat touched about StorSimple. Drew talked about Azure Site Recovery. We have many other solutions, including Azure Backup, partner solutions, that you have a robust portfolio of backup solutions and recovery solutions to safeguard and protect your data. Cost savings apart, it provides simplicity and reduces complexity for you on your end. All of the management is on the cloud provider or Azure's end. The other thing we talk about is compliance a lot when it comes to data and backing up data, right? We mentioned earlier that Azure has one of the largest compliance portfolio and we have a big global footprint. That means that with us, you can also meet your compliance standards and very easily do that. I think there is a detailed session on backup, archive, and recovery where you can learn more about these solutions, and also I think there is a demo for you to see how that happens in the cloud. The next scenario I want to talk about is dev and test. We've mentioned this earlier on. I want to leave the stat up there and talk a little bit to that. So today, 50% of the workloads are production, but the remaining 50% are non-production or dev test workload. That's a majority number of workloads as well, which are dev and test. But the thing to note also is developers are saying that it's not easy, it's pretty complex for them to get dev and test resources or set up dev and test environments. That's where dev and test as a starting point of the cloud becomes more and more interesting. We've talked about this earlier times, and Drew showed about how it's easy to provision a VM. That's very true for a dev and test environment, too. You can spin it up very, very easily and create it very easily. The next thing is, when you think about a dev and test environment, is scale, right? How is this going to work in a production scenario? Say I want to go to different regions, different locations, how is it going to scale up, right? You can simulate these environments by going to the cloud. You can scale up and down. You can actually test it at scale. The next big thing is cost. This is a theme. It's coming up again and again. So, right, dev and test resources. You don't want wastage in terms of the resources or virtual machines running all the time. You probably can set policies, you can set automated shutdown procedures and stuff that will help you to then cost save and also not waste these resources. So with that, what I want to do is turn over to Drew. He's going to show a cool demo on Dev Test Lab, which is a service on Azure that helps you deploy dev and test environments very easily. Over to you, Drew.
Thank you. So as Vidya mentioned, one of the most common scenarios, and if you think about it with dev tests, you're spinning things up, spinning things down. Being able to only pay for what you use is a fabulous solution in those environments. And we've actually made it easier through a thing called Dev Test Labs to actually simplify that process. So let me flip over here. Now let's say that you are the administrator, the IT pro, and you have a set of developers that need to spin up VMs. They want a self-service manner, but you're a little worried about giving them full access to Azure. You certainly don't want to have 100 different subscriptions floating around or 1,000 different subscriptions. And this is where Dev Test Labs comes in. So in the set of services, we're going to actually create a new Dev Test Lab that's going to set up an environment for us to configure for our team. So we'll just do this as Ignite Lab. You pick a location, the storage. In this case, we're going to use the standardized storage because this is dev test. We actually want to try and conserve as much resources as possible, save some money here. So we're going to create this lab that is going to be the environment that we can configure various policies for our users. So that's going to get kicked off in just a moment. We'll actually have this lab set up. We can click into the lab, and there's a set of things we'll want to look at first. So we're going to first look at the policy settings and then the configuration. So if we go into policy settings, we're able to configure a set of things. So for example, the allowed virtual machine sizes. You may not want the your developers just doing a basic website to spin up the G5 machines or some of those L machines that cost a fair amount per hour. And so you may want to come in here and enable restricted sizes. And so what we'll do here is I'll check our standard A1 and standard A2, so two core machines, and we'll give them the D series machines as well. We'll save that. That's going to restrict the sizes. We can select the number of instances. So here we'll say each user can deploy two instances, or you can set a number on the lab overall. And then a really powerful solution here is the auto shutdown or auto start. So auto shutdown, I can schedule here to shut down every evening at 7 o'clock in the Eastern time zone. And if I want, I can send a notification using a thing we called webhook that you can hook into any kind of a notification system to let the user know that the machine will be shut down at that point in time. Finally, if you're shutting them down to make sure that they're as productive as possible, you can come in here and allow automatic turning them on. And so when your developers come in, and if it's like Microsoft, they're really not in at 7, it's closer to 9, and that may be being generous. But we'll start the machines up so that when they get in at 9 or a little bit later, they'll be up and ready to go. The configuration allows you to do other configuration on the machine. One of the most common we hear is configuring the image. So here, instead of giving access to all images where some of those images have a per hour charge, we're gonna go in here and restrict this down. We'll just do for the Windows Server. Delay here a bit. We'll select the machine here, scroll down through all the different SQL servers here. And here we have a Windows Server data center. We'll select that one and save it. And now when a user comes in, so here I've got, the last piece here is I want to give access. So now we specify the users that we're going to give access to that lab. This is using the Azure Active Directory integrated solution. I'm going to add a user here with the role of here the lab user, dev test lab user. So I'm going to give this lab user role, and I'm going to grant it to my Hotmail account here. So I have another account to log into, select that, click OK. And now when I come in from this other instance here, let me change to the right directory here. This to sync. So if I were to log in here, I'm coming in, connecting into the Microsoft lab here that we just set up, and now I'm going to navigate in. I don't have other permissions on that account, but if I click on Dev Test Labs, I'm going to see that one Ignite Lab. If I click into here and I click into Create a Virtual Machine, I'm able to create a virtual machine using just the same configuration that I had set in the configuration and policy. So I have the one image that's available. And if we come down here, the sizes are also restricted down to those set of sizes that I have. So for a common scenario for development and testing purposes, the Dev Test Labs makes it very, very easy to get a great control, but immediately get up and run and start taking the advantages of the Azure cloud. Switch back, and with back, I'll turn over to Vidya to take us through a set of additional solutions that you may actually spin up within Azure Virtual Machines. Vidya.
Thanks again, Drew. So the last workload or scenario we'll talk about, line of business applications when you consider or come about IaaS, right? So by line of business applications, I'm talking about applications like SharePoint, SAP, other ISV applications that you might be running on-prem. So why should we consider line of business applications as a starting point, or why would they consider the cloud might be a question that you might have. So similar to what we talked about in all of our different scenarios, dev tests, right, like creating an agile test environment, super easy to do on the cloud. Hybrid, Venkat touched on this earlier about our consistent hybrid cloud, right? Anything that you have in terms of a line of business application, you can seamlessly now extend that to the cloud. You can also deploy the applications in different regions and get better reach, as we saw in the case of Zespri. Deployment and management of ease, like SharePoint farms and such that probably took days for you to now deploy, takes much, much lesser time, even hours, on the cloud. The most important thing I want to talk about is support, right? By going to a cloud provider like Azure, you get best-in-class support. And one example we saw was the RHEL support that we talked about earlier on. You get, no matter whatever scenario, anytime you run 24/7, great support service. Some of you might be thinking, hey, I have these annual licenses. I have multi-year licenses with all of these vendors. What happens if I now have to move my application to the cloud? And that's where license mobility or bring your own license comes into picture, right? We are asking you to bring those images with your licenses, and you don't have to pay for those licenses again. That's key and that's cool. So those are some of the benefits that you have by moving your line of business applications, and why many companies are thinking about moving them to the cloud today. I want to talk about some of the Microsoft applications, and then we'll also switch into some of the ISV applications that we support today. So if you can see there, right, that's a big list of logos and also all the other services. We have fully supported and fully integrated all of these various services. So you get great support there from SQL Server, SharePoint, Windows Server, Dynamics, you name it. We have all of these various services and applications that you can now easily do on Azure. We also have partnerships for some of the major ISV applications, Oracle, IBM, SAP, and Red Hat being a few. So in addition to bring your own license that we talked about, we also have images which are included with license. So if you want to do a proof of concept, you really don't want to go and buy an annual license or a longer term license, you can just buy a license image and then you just pay for what you use, right? The VM resources and the license on a use per basis. We also for SAP have a deployment in the library option as well available. In addition to all of this, we also saw like 4,000 marketplace images. So a lot of the major ISV applications that you want to deploy or line of business you want to deploy, they are available and easy to deploy on Azure today. With that, what I want to do is transition to our last demo. So Drew will be taking us through how easy it is to create a multi-tier line of business application on Azure. And he'll also talk about the ARM templates that we've been talking about since our the fundamental story earlier on. So Drew, over to you.
Thank you. So I've been mentioning the ARM templates. And in fact, we've been using ARM templates behind the scenes. When we deployed that virtual machine, we deployed the dev test lab. The portal builds on templates, and it creates these templates and deploys them. But now I want to move and pivot a little bit to kind of talk about if you're building your own. So we're going to start off with one of these templates. And what we're doing is we're setting up the infrastructure for a multi-tier application. So you typically, we're starting with a virtual network. And then we're going to define the subnets that we want in the virtual network. So we got a front-end subnet that's going to act as our DMZ. We got an application subnet for the application servers, and then a back-end subnet for the back-end machines. We use an NSG, or a network security group, to define the permissions between those subnets. And so we're going to define an NSG that's going to allow the front-end subnet, the DMZ, to talk to the application tier, but not to the back-end. And of course, the application tier to come in and talk to the back-end. We're going to use an application load balancer in the front end. This allows us to do layer 7 load balancing, client affinity. It also allows us to do SSL offload if we want in the application load balancer. It's going to connect into a set of virtual machines in the mid-tier, And then the back end, we're going to use a load balancer connect to the back end servers. We call this the internal load balancer because it's a load balancer within that internal network in that private address space. Now, let me dig it. Let me go over to the machine here. Now, I gave you the diagram what we wanted to build, but you may want to have a little bit of an easier way to get started with that. And so what we have within Azure under our resources blade here, there's a set of templates, and you can come and search for the various templates we have available. This here, we're going to use the multi-tier application gateway. All of these templates are available on GitHub. And so if we actually browse to GitHub, you will notice the template and all artifacts associated with that. If we go up one level, sorry, quick start. I mean to go up two levels. The quick start template has a large number, over 300 templates that have been put here by Microsoft, by our partners, and just by community members. And you can look through here and search, and if you search through here, you'll see just a phenomenal amount of getting started templates in like a 100, 200 level, 300 level templates, and keep scrolling down and we're gonna find more applications, database solutions. And so this is a phenomenal place to get started with a new deployment. So we got in here, you can see things like SAP. That'll bring you to the site here. You can click on a deploy to Azure that will immediately take you into Azure. We'll load up that template, and once that's done, you're going to end up in a state like this where the template's been loaded. And so if we look at the template itself is a JSON document, and so we have a view here. Each template is constructed of three main parts, a set of parameters that you fill out to run the template, a set of variables, so these are the variables defined and used in the template, and then the resources. So in this template, we can see that it's going to spin up the different resources we saw in the diagram. It's going to spin up the virtual network, uses storage accounts for the disks in the back end, our application load balancer, and our internal load balancer. And this will then spin that up. You can modify the template as you want in here. You could download the template. But in this case, we're just going to go ahead and we're not going to make any changes. We're going to come in to the set of parameters. So this is reading the template, pulling those parameters. And we set a couple things here. The storage account name that we're going to use for the disks here. So the storage account name for the database. And then the normal things like the administrator, username, and then a password. The other configurations, as you can see here, there's a default values that you can take. There's help. You can get more information about what each of those are. Some of these are in dropdowns. Like, for example, here you get the static or dynamic IP address. You go down through here, and you can set the parameters. And you can have as many or as few of these parameters as you want. This can be used, again, on the quick start or on templates that you create yourself. Then, like any other thing in Azure Resource Manager, we're going to define the resource group. So define the resource group, the location we want to deploy everything. Look at the legal terms. If they're doing any of the third-party applications are deploying in here, they show up here. You have to agree to the terms. Click the purchase that allows you to agree to the terms if you're doing third-party solutions, and click create. And this is going to go through and it's going to look at those templates. The resource manager is going to orchestrate the configuration and the setup. So it's going to set up the network first, and it's going to start setting up the virtual machines and just configuring that as you want. You can, in addition, add things like desired state configuration or scripts to run inside the virtual machine. Again, on the session on Friday that I have, we'll go into a lot more detail, and you can come on that session, find out how to use desired state configuration and scripts to configure the machines. But on this demo here, when it's done, you're going to have a multi-tier application that's set up. It will have configured all of the virtual machines, three database servers for the back end, the networks, the security groups. And everything will be set up, and you can then just start log onto those machines and configure those machines for your actual application. So it makes it very, very easy to both set up your configuration. You can check that JSON file in, and so you have configuration as code. You hand that out, and you have a set of parameters for your dev environment, another set of parameters for staging and production. So you have that very consistent configuration that you can use over and over again within Azure or Azure Stack and other solutions that we offer built upon Azure Power. So with that, I'm going to turn back to Venkat to wrap up.
All right, thank you, Drew. So hopefully you guys in the session so far, we had a whole lot of coverage, right? We talked, of course, initially a little bit about the different services, right? The compute services, the virtual machines, storage, and some networking things. And then we kind of like, you know, went through all the way from creating a simple virtual machine to running a dev test labs environment to actually a little bit more complicated multi-tier applications. So that was the purpose of basically the session. All of these demos are easy for you guys to get started if you haven't started with Azure or IaaS before. So at this time, I would love to wrap up the session, leave this there if you want to go and dig deeper into some of these sessions. We do have a SharePoint session, an SAP session, deep dive into those on Thursday. If you're interested in those, do attend those sessions. So thank you so much for attending. We'll be here to take a few question and answers now as well. Thank you.
Thank you.